Stanford Review kind of describe friendship in terms of giving some part of yourself to somebody else and, in a sense, exchanging that. Being personally at a spot where you're willing to donate yourself.
Yeah.
Welcome to part two of this week's message in our series, Chasing Wisdom. Every week this summer at Three Creeks Church, we're chasing wisdom by looking at what God says about pursuing a life well lived. The second part of the chase is finding people who have followed God for a long time and gained wisdom. Let's hear what they have to say.
Hey, what's up, Three Creeks Church? We are in week 10, part two, the last week in the Chasing Wisdom series. This is an interview that I have been looking forward to for a long time. I feel like I met you a few years ago, and he was the guy in the room that I wanted to know, and I wanted to do this with, and here we are. So I'm here with Nick Nye, and I don't know probably even enough about you to introduce you, other than I just, your reputation goes before you. So I'm excited
hopefully
to get to talk with you today.
Yeah.
Who are you? Tell us about your family, maybe your ministry a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm married to Brittany, and we have four kids. We moved to Columbus in 2007 to plant Veritas Community Church, and we're part of that for a little over 11 years, and then we moved to New York City to replant a church in the middle of Manhattan. So we took our four kids and lived in a dinky apartment in the middle of Manhattan for the last 2 years, and then this past September, you know, Ohio just has a way of sucking you back in, so you can't really leave. So it did that to us. We got sucked back in, and here we are, back here doing ministry just to help pastors and unite churches together.
Yeah, I love it. Did you say how many kids you had?
Four.
Four kids, ages?
12. Oh, no, 14, 12, 10, and 8.
Okay, so they're
three girls and a boy.
They're all wishing they had been in school this spring and hoping that their school here in a minute.
Yeah, they did not like being home at all, but
probably because they missed their friends.
Exactly.
Because and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about friendship. Proverbs 13:20 says, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." So on the topic of friendship, doesn't feel like a super spiritual topic, but it is. Mm-hmm. God made it, and man, I think it's the best way to live. I just want to kind of glean some wisdom from you and ask some questions about it, but maybe as you reflect on your life, when you identify or describe a great friendship, what's that look like?
Yeah, I mean, friendship is, of course, one of those things that the world looks at in general, kind of looks at with a little bit of bafflement of where do you put friendship in terms of categories. Is this like a spiritual thing? Is this a mental health thing? Is this a you know, just a societal function? And so we've always kind of had a hard time of knowing where to sort of put that category. I know the Stanford Review really strives to put this in sort of the mental health category, and like, this, you know, it's good for your mental health to have these friendships. And so they kind of describe friendship in terms of giving some part of yourself to somebody else and, in a sense, exchanging that. So you take something from somebody else. And so I think that's actually really helpful in terms of thinking about it, but not just in the mental health space, but you think about it even in the soul space of spiritual formation. It's like when you're building friendship, you can talk about sports and you can talk about, you know, the movies and Netflix series and things like that. And you kind of exchange some of that information. But friendship comes when you're starting to like really actually giving something of your soul. And a lot of people don't know how to do that, or they don't want to do that, or they are really scared to do that. James K. Smith says this, where he says the best sort of traveling movies are buddy movies. So if you think about all the movies that they go on some kind of journey, like think of Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
It's all about them like building friendship and understanding of one another as a family and, you know, on a different level as friends. So when you think about the whole of life, it's a buddy. It's supposed to be a buddy life.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but where, you know, we're going to go through these ebbs and flows of loneliness and not having friends, depending on our season of life. You know, if you're a mom or a family of just raising little kids and you've given everything out,
yeah.
If friendship is you giving to somebody else, you're like, I have nothing left to give. I've given it all to these little people in my life, and you have nothing left to give. And so there's just like a deep loneliness in that. And because those little people don't give anything back. And so what it requires then is, again, another, like a buddy movie, is somebody else who can come along and give something to you in those seasons where you're giving it somewhere else.
Yeah. If you think about, you know, Three Creeks, like we've got a lot of, you know, younger families. We've got folks that are coming out of college. They were living in some fantasy land where they lived with all of their friends. And then all of a sudden, I talked to a lot of 23, 24, 25 year olds who go, first year out of college was the hardest year because they weren't with their friends.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly, you know, in the same way that when you had your first day of school in fourth grade, it was like, okay, you gonna go make some friends? Like, a lot of us are back there where we go, I would like to have more friends. I'm new here, or I haven't connected here. I'm new to this church. Maybe just speak into, you know, what would be some ways that we could pursue friendship practically, and if we feel lonely, what do we do?
Man, yeah, you just hit like on a lot of things that I think are...
Sorry, that was like four questions in one. I'm sorry.
I know. Well, I think about that transition from college to adulthood. There is so much in that that we don't pay attention to. I think pastorally, you know, we probably can do a lot better at growing and helping with that transition, because we have a lot of people burn out on the church because community life looks a lot different than college life, college community life.
Yeah, for sure.
And because of that, there's sort of an expectation like, hey, what, you know, why can't you hang out at midnight? Like,
right.
Like, you know, I mean, like, why not?
Right.
Or like, why can't we just take a road trip somewhere? But, and so I think there's a lot there that needs to be talked about. And I think college students have to have a better post-college students entering into the workplace, they have to have an expectation that, the relationships that they experienced in the formation that happened in college, they need to keep that as an expectation, like keep that as a standard. Like, yeah, that's what friendship actually is supposed to look like. And you're experiencing in its height in college. And I wouldn't want, as a pastor, I wouldn't want to discourage them saying now
right,
college is over. Real world is you don't have friends. You have to just do the daily grind at work, and you have the office talk and the sports talk. That's it. But how can that cultivation happen within standards? So I guess going to the other side of just saying, like, how can somebody make friends in that is like, you know, learning how to come alongside somebody where they are. So if you're a college student and you're not two college students, it's going to be easy. You know, you can meet up at a bar, you can meet up at a park, you can and meet up at 2 a.m, whatever.
Right.
But if you're, again, like working 60 hours a week, you know, it might have to be an early morning breakfast and consistent, and you might have to be sacrificed and meet people where they are in that. And I think that takes a lot of work and a lot of intentionality. But I think the hardest part beyond even those things is being personally at a spot where you're willing to donate yourself.
Yeah.
Which is where most people just aren't. Probably 90%. I imagine 90% of people at Three Creeks would not be willing to go there. Maybe because, again, they've poured out themselves somewhere or they've just their fear. They've been burned by some friendships or something like that.
Yeah. You mentioned like the early morning breakfast thing, and it made me think, you know, making friends when you're married, it requires two people. And if you have kids, for sure, right? Because if Morgan wants to go, if my wife wants to go and build friendships with people at 6 a.m, That means yours truly is making breakfast for the toddlers at home. Mm-hmm. But what an honorable thing. What an honorable way to serve your spouse is to, like, propel them into godly friendships.
Yeah, it's funny because spouses, what I've found, not this is not always true, but I found that a lot of spouses hold each other back sometimes from maybe jealousy or, like, hey, you get to go out with your hunting buddies or whatever, and I'm stuck here with the kids all the time. And there's sort of this jealousy tension when I think couples both have to be at a spot where they're trying to find ways for them to go and, like, be, you know, have time away from the kids or have time away from housework, or any of those kinds of things. And at the same time, form friendships together, you know, like that. And I think not just other couples, but, like, single people in your life that are coming along for dinner regularly or, you know, knocking on the door often. And so I think married couples really have to encourage that one another, not hold it back.
Yeah, it's good. Shifting gears a little bit, and this is actually a question, I don't think I prepped you on it, and it might be hard. I'm not sure. We'll see. But, you know, you think about this proverb, you know, a companion of fools suffers harm. I know that there have been seasons in my life where I've had to kind of trim off friendships that have been unhealthy for me. And there's people in our church, I can think of people specifically who they are wanting to take big strides spiritually. Their friends are the ones that are holding them back. They don't want to feel, they don't want to stick their head out. They don't want to get chopped off. So navigating a little bit of, like, I want to make a move spiritually. I want to be more engaged in my church. I want to share my faith. But being a part of a friend group, that's just not what we do. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to somebody who's there who wants to take that step?
Yeah, and I think the step needs to be the goal of actually moving in that direction. But I, you know, I see how, again, the goal is a sharing of self. And if that other self, other person's self is maybe in just a, you know, we're talking about spiritual depth, they're, like, in a spiritually different place, you can give to them, but you can't expect them to just, you can't expect to receive from them the same intent. If they're not a Christian, you're not going to expect wisdom from Christ. You know, there's certainly, like, common grace and wisdom that they'll give of things, lessons they've learned in the world. Lots of stuff worthy of hearing, but there's a gospel conversation that they may not be able to give you. And that's where your expectation should be. You know, I can't expect this person to give me spiritual depth and be able to help me understand Romans chapter 8 and guide me through spiritual living. So then I'm going to have to just have that expectation set. That doesn't mean I necessarily cut them off. Sometimes you do need to cut others off. And I would just venture to say that that's probably not in the sphere of friendship, but it's just in the sphere of unhealthy relationship. I always say friendship is both powerful and it's pathetic. Hmm. It's super powerful in that you have a people. Hmm. And that's powerful in and of itself. You have a people, you have people you can share life with. You have people who you can fight with.
Yep.
And your kids can experience relationship together. It's powerful. But then it's pathetic. And then it just never works out how we want it. Mm-hmm. There's always moments of drama. There's times we screw up. We wrong. We don't know how to say sorry. We don't know how to repent.
Yeah.
It's just completely fallen apart. I think community just functions like that, you know? Community, if you think of your small groups even as the microcosm of that, how many small groups do people leave and go, what was the point of that?
Yeah.
That was pathetic. Then sometimes you're, like, all together, somebody shares their soul,
right,
and something clicks, and you're all like, we're praying, we're in this together. It's just
powerful.
The Spirit's here. The power's here.
Yeah.
But people don't stick around long enough to experience those in all their bad and good. But that's the journey.
Yeah.
It's the whole journey.
Yeah. When you just think over your life, you go, man, friendships have been some of God's greatest gifts to us. Like, what a cool deal when it falls our way and we have a great friendship. I think as a kid, you're growing up and your parents are beating into your head, you know, you are going to be what your friends are, whatever. Like, you know, you'll become who you surround yourself with. Maybe speak to the folks who, like, all of our kids are going to kindergarten like next year for the first time, and they're gonna be outside of our helicopter watch zone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna send them into class and they're gonna make friends.
Yeah.
What are some things that you have learned in having a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old? Just look back over the last 10 years and go, you know, in an effort to, like, help your kids find great friends, how have you and Brittany done that?
I'm trying to model for them, like, friendship. Yeah. Too many times parents are trying to be friends with their kids, trying to fulfill those friendships with their kids. Their kids cannot handle being their mom or dad's friend. Mom and dad need friends.
Yeah.
And they need that. Their kids need that so much because that tells them and shows them what kind of friendships they're going to have, what kind of relationships, and how they're going to donate their soul to other people.
Yeah.
If they don't, then what's going to happen is they're just going to wing it, and they're going to, I'm making really big generalized statements, but, like, you know, your little girl is just going to donate her soul to whatever guy gives her attention, or your son is going to put all his energy and his effort into sports and never be able to cultivate true friendship.
Yeah.
They need to see it from mom and dad,
that's good,
and each other, but also in their friends.
It's good.
Some great conversations with my kids have come along when we're friends with people who are very different from us.
Yeah.
And they come over and have dinner with us and bring things up that my kids know are contrary to our values.
Yeah.
But still how we love them. And they're watching my wife and I, again, using some of this language, like, donate ourselves to them to say, here, we're giving this to you. And they're seeing the gospel fully on display of how Christ gave himself to his church, you know, and his bride's people.
I feel like you've said donate 6 or 7 times. And I love that. I love that image of, like, it's a donation. It's not a payment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a donation. Nothing in return expected. You know, I feel like sometimes I think I just wish somebody would be my friend versus I need to be the friend. I need to be the donator, not somebody who is giving me what I want. So good.
Well, we statistically know everybody wants a friend.
Right.
So
everybody wants a friend.
So go out and donate today. You know,
right.
And
click on the link below.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And somebody's going to take it.
Yeah.
There'll be some that won't, but somebody's going to be like, I've been longing for this for so long. You don't even know.
Yeah. So. All right. So 4 more questions, totally not friendship related.
All right.
Quick answers. Bang, bang, bang. 1 book that everybody should read while they're younger.
See, you just
maybe other than the Bible, because I think
okay, yeah, that's the
what's a great book that you feel like a young person ought to read?
I think every young person should read. I'm gonna go C.S. Lewis.
Okay,
and I would say anything by C.S. Lewis, but certainly Mere Christianity.
Okay, it's a good one. Best pizza in Columbus.
How far out of Columbus? Does that have to be Columbus proper?
No. Just, you know, we're in Gahanna, a lot of our people, so we're on the east side.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay,
tell me driving distance.
I'm from Newark. So,
okay, perfect.
Pizza Cottage in Newark. Have you had it?
Okay, I'm pretty sure the owner of Pizza Cottage, like, goes to our church.
Dude.
And I'm not kidding.
I'm your biggest fan. If you ever want to send me a gift card, I'll take it.
I'm not kidding. I really do. I really think that they go to our church.
So there's a mountain biking course right by Pizza Cottage, and I just sold
that,
like, 50
so
people.
Great.
I was like, you got to go to Pizza Cottage.
That is great. All right. One of the things I like about you, Nick, is when we talk, we love to talk about the church and what God's doing in the church. Obviously, the last 6 months of church has been wild, and I don't even know how our church is doing. But when you look at the next 10 years of church, maybe help us know, what do you think might be in store for the church in America the next 10 years? How's it going to change?
I think we're going to see slow change, even though we've seen really fast changes over the last few months. You know, like I was working with a church in Plain City who didn't have a church. They didn't even have a website. And, you know, they're forced to, like, figure out how to do live stream through Facebook and YouTube. I mean, massive shifts for them. Their head's spinning. But I think we are going to have to think like Leslie Newbegin, who's a great missiologist. He's writing about a secular age, and I could riff on this for a long time, but I won't. But I think some of the biggest shifts over the next 10 years are going to be, I think even Gahanna is going to be maybe one of the central places for this. It's going to be radically international, and it's going to be radically postmodern. Two issues that I think are, we thought the suburbs in America were sort of insulated from some of that, that I think are becoming the epicenters of actually international growth and post-Christian, deconstructed Christianity. And so I think the church is going to be on a long trajectory of trying to figure out how to teach like that, where, you know, some of the things that we've done, like, you know, stage aesthetics and production value are going to start going way down, and sort of the maybe intellectual and or compassion piece of engaging multiple nations is going to have to go up.
I'm into that.
Yeah.
It makes me excited.
It makes me excited too.
About the next 10 years. It's beautiful. Cool. Last question. What's one thing somebody in their, I guess, 20s, 30s, what's one thing that we ought to do every day?
Well, that's an easy one. That's a softball, because we have to cultivate spiritual habits. In those times, it is unbelievably crucial in those time periods, in your 20s and 30s, to cultivate a daily ritual of communion with God. And that means Bible reading, that means prayer, that means journaling, you know, and it can be a hodgepodge of those things. But a 30 minutes, I know that's a lot for some people. Some people, 10 minutes, whatever. Start somewhere, but 30 minutes where you're just setting aside time to be with God. And I think cultivating, there's lots of books out there and lots of stuff that can help you figure out how to cultivate that more. But cultivating the soul is definitely a deeply missed thing in the church these days. And when you're in your 20s and 30s, you know, that's, you're setting a habit for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to get it in your 20s and 30s, wow, it's going to be really hard to get it in your 40s.
To implement it later, right? Mm-hmm. It's good. Well, week 10. This is it, dude. We're wrapped up.
All right. You're
the grand finale.
All right. I'll take it.
Thanks for being here. And thanks for following along on Chasing Wisdom. This has been week 10, part 2 on friendship. Three Creeks, I love you. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening. We hope this interview was encouraging and helpful as you chase wisdom and pursue a life well lived. To find out more about our church, connect with others, or to give online, visit threecreekschurch.com.